Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Confessions of a Crappy Christian podcast. I'm your host and resident crappy Christian, Blake Guiche, and I'm so pumped to be bringing you season two of this show, packed full of more people telling incredible stories of who God is and what he's done. Today's interview is with Stacy Booth. Stacy lost her husband, Brad, in November of 2017 to a rare form of cancer after his 7-year battle. And now she spends her time raising their two children and fulfilling Brad's last challenge to her, to tell their story. Our conversation navigates through grief and loss and what God looks like in the midst. Stacy, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, Blake. I'm excited.
So this is your first podcast interview.
Yes.
I'm so excited. It really is like such an honor when I get to kind of be people's first interview, because I have no doubt that this is the first of many. So just to like get us started, introduce yourself, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I grew up in Birmingham and born and raised here. And so I'm definitely that sugary sweet Alabama girl that married into the Cajun world.
Oh, yeah.
And so, let me say, I love some Cajuns because y'all have this realness.
Mm-hmm.
This authenticity that is so refreshing.
Maybe that's why like my whole thing is like severe authenticity is just because I'm Cajun. Maybe that's what it is.
Yes. Like y'all cut the sugar and you go to it. I love that. Diving into my story, I became a widow 2 years ago, and I have a 6-year-old daughter, Nola, and a 4-year-old son named Gray. And we are still in Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm a retired nurse, just kind of living with my babes and working through grief right now. We're hunkered down.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was just 2 years ago. I know that you have this, like, really, I mean, heart-wrenching and incredible story. So I would just love for you to, like, tell us that story. I know, like, walking through cancer and what becoming a widow at such a young age was like.
Yes. Well, we met in 2006 and we fell quickly in love. We dated for 6 months, engaged, and then married 6 months later.
Oh,
and
I love that.
We had this easy love. Everything just kind of clicked and fell into place, and he was my person. But about 3 years into our marriage, he began to have abdominal pain off and on. And we went into the ER and the scan showed his spleen was enlarged. And the surgeon said, hey, look, this is from playing football. We're just going to remove your spleen. It's going to be no problem. But the day of surgery, he came out into the waiting room and his face revealed our new hard truth. And what they found inside of Brad's abdomen was ugly. The cancer had spread all throughout multiple organs in his abdomen. And Brad was diagnosed with a rare form of sarcoma. And it's called desmoplastic small round cell tumor. 250 cases were ever reported at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and they told us that he had a 15% chance to live 5 years. And so our world stopped that day. We were quickly thrown into treatment and left with this like hopeless and defeated feeling going into it, because they're telling you it's incurable. Most people don't even make it to 3 years, but we're going to give it all we got. So I felt like my hopes and my dreams that I had for my life, that white picket fence, those babies, all of that came crashing down. And my only hope and dream was that he would live and that we would have time together. Basically, the next 7 years of our life was battling cancer, numerous, probably 15 surgeries. He was treated at MD Anderson and Cleveland Clinic. We tried everything, every clinical trial, every drug, every diet, green juice that you can imagine. We gave it our all. And at the end of that 7 years, we were behind the eight ball, and the cancer had grown out of our control. And in October of 2017, Brad was placed on hospice, and he would be on hospice for 30 days. And they were the most amazing, gut-wrenching days of my life, to see my strong and full of life husband being taken by this disease. But yet his inner strength was growing insanely. And I remember him looking at me one day and saying, "Stacy, I see you with the weight of the world on your shoulders." And he said, "Mine is gone." He said, "I have this light feeling, like I know the joy is awaiting me." And to see him so hope-filled, yet his body was dying, has given me seriously the strength to live each day. That's kind of where a lot of my story began, in those hospice days of, you know, God, my worst fear is coming true. And how will I ever survive this?
And I think, I mean, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm like, I think most people listening are going to be like, "Oh, this is my worst fear." Like, you have lived through most people's worst fear, you know, and the fact that you've come out the other side and are using it, you know, for the good and the glory of God. And aren't curled up in the fetal position, which no one would like blame you for, you know, is just, I think, such a testament to who God is, that he really is who he says he is.
He is. And he shows up in a big way.
And so, I mean, that's a level of grief that I think so many of us are unaccustomed with. How did people walk through that with you?
My sister is a missionary in Africa, and she came to stay with me for 40 days. And in those 40 days, I saw how, what is the biggest gift that somebody can give to me is coming into the foxhole, sitting with me, just being, not trying to fix it, not saying, "Stacy, well, it could be worse," or "This is going to be better one day," but just sitting and bringing me food and letting me rock in my rocking chair. I think I sat in my chair for 40 days and just in the quiet, and her presence gave me so much strength.
Yes. I think that's so, like, I feel like I want to like yell about it. Like that, I think so often, like, those of us that are on, like, the fringes of the grief are like, "I don't know what to do." And the people that are in it are like, "You're doing it. Like, just be here." Like, literally. And I know that different people are gifted differently and equipped differently. And there are some people who very naturally, like, jump into that. I am not one of those people. I am working on my capacity for, like, because I want to fix it, you know, like, I want to, and I'm like, if I can't fix it, then I don't want anything to do with it. And, like, life and friendship and relationship, like, just don't work that way. And so learning that sometimes all you really can do is show up, and that's enough.
Yeah. It's not about what you say or what casserole you bring. Our gifts, about you, just your body, just sitting in that moment is so healing.
So were you and Brad, you were believers before all of this?
We were. We both grew up in Christian homes and became believers at young ages.
So how did this, I'm sure it was like looked different at different stages, but how did that journey impact your relationship with God?
For me, it, my mom had cancer and she passed when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this was, it felt like a direct hit from God.
Mm.
Almost like, wait a minute, haven't I already done this? Like,
I already paid my penance. Yeah. Yeah.
On suffering. And how can you take this person in my life that has brought so much healing to my broken heart, and now he's going to leave too? It was a wrestle for me. But God showed me very clearly that those band-aids that were covering my old wounds as they were being ripped off, that he was taking me to like my most broken place, which was death, from my mom. And that he was going to bring healing from that. And so it's like he had to return me to this most broken place, not out of him being unkind or ungentle, but in a very loving way, showing me that he was enough when the bottom fell out or when the worst fear came true. And so I feel like my relationship with God became very tangible when I became a widow, because as a woman you feel so vulnerable. Your comfort has been stripped and you're a single mom and there's no man in the home to protect you. But God felt so tangible to me, and I felt so dependent on him, and that I knew he had to be my provider.
Yeah.
That these wounds were going to be healed. Yeah.
Right. And you said, like, my relationship with God became tangible. And I remember, I've talked about it a good amount on the show, so people are, like, familiar with the story. But my, like, now 5-year-old had a near-death experience when she was, like, right over one. And, you know, we spent, like, a whole week in the PICU. And, like, they weren't sure what the outcome was going to be. And I can remember, like, saying almost those exact words, that I feel like God is tangible, you know. And it's crazy how trauma, that is so often the outcome for people, is that God, all of a sudden, it's like he's like boots on the ground. And he's like,
yes,
tangible and real. And it, you know, it's almost like I can remember, like, I felt like I was experiencing miracles in real time, which you don't think of when you're like, machines are breathing for your kid, or you're losing your husband. You know, your husband is fighting like a, what everybody in the medical field is telling you is like a losing battle against cancer. And like, you're still experiencing miracles, and you're still like almost like experiencing joy, like through your husband saying those things of like, I have hope and the weight is lifted. And that,
yeah,
time after time when I have conversations with people, whether it's for the show or just in real life, about traumatic experiences, almost all of them, part of the story is that God, or my relationship with him, became so much more tangible.
Yes. And I think the miracle aspect of, although we didn't get the ultimate healing on earth, God was showing me, he was giving me miracles along the way. He gave me 2 children when they said there was no chance of children. He doubled Brad's lifespan from 3 years to 7. I mean, over doubled it.
Yeah. I think that there's so much to the story that you're like, oh my gosh, like, they told us that we shouldn't be able to have kids, and we did. They told him that he was going to have 3 years, and he had 7, you know? And to be willing and, I guess, aware of God and his goodness enough to call those things miracles, you know, that I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, I mean, like, he lived longer than they said he should. And you're like, no, that's a miracle. Like, and we didn't get healing this side of earth, but he is, like, perfect and whole in heaven with God. Which, when that kind of stuff happens, I'm like, I totally got the short end of this stick. Like,
right. Yes.
I'm down here on this broken earth.
Right.
Like, and it's not funny, but it, like, you know, it's like a laugh so you don't cry thing where you're like, you're literally with Jesus. You're perfect. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have to, like, do all of this without you, you know?
Yeah, Brad would say, you have the harder job, Stacey.
Yeah. Absolutely. Leaving. And I love that he, you know, that he knew that. So, since you love this podcast, I wanted to introduce you to another one I think you'll really enjoy. Confidently She is hosted by the incredible body confidence coach, Rebecca Biggie, who is welcoming women into Christ-like confidence that does more than just make us feel good, but actually impacts the way we view ourselves and the way we interact with the world. Confidently She is a refreshing, consistent reminder that women are worth so much more than beauty, and that our feminine hearts are an essential part of God's plan for the world. Check out Rebecca and listen to Confidently She anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you were kind of like given the opportunity to talk to or communicate with people like on both sides, what would it be important to you? So we've already kind of talked about like walking through grief with people that like just show up, like just be mm-hmm. there. What about like the people who are actually in the hard space or are in the midst of that grief?
I think the most shocking thing for me was that grief felt so physical. Mm. I remember the sun would set and I felt like the pain was going to eat me alive. And I think allowing yourself to not have expectations of when that pain's going to leave, don't set a timeline. Because it comes and goes and it manifests in different ways, whether it's a smell or a flashback or a memory. But allowing yourself to press into the pain, I remember thinking like, God, you've got purpose here. Like, you don't let somebody become a widow at 32 and it be wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have so much of yourself for me and I don't want to numb out here. I want to press into it and trust that you're going to bring purpose. And I think the healing comes when we're like acknowledging our pain, when we're letting ourselves cry and be restless before God.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That was so good. Because that's that's been your reality. And it like, grief and healing are not linear, you know? And so not only like don't put a timeline on it, but like you may feel like you may wake up one morning and be like, wait, I feel great. And then the next day feel like you've taken 10 steps back. And that doesn't mean
yes,
that you're
fresh.
Not healing. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And in pressing into the pain, I struggle with a lot of like mental health kind of stuff. And one of the biggest things that I've learned is pressing in instead of trying to escape it. They like mm-hmm. scientifically, when you feel a panic attack coming on, if you lean into it, it actually like lessens the intensity and shortens the time span of the panic attack versus if you spend all of this time fighting it and trying to escape it, you really just prolong it. And it's crazy to think how all of that is so connected and that really applies to the pain that comes with grief as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the tears, if I just allow myself to cry, sometimes the panic, it just soothes that panic and the anxiety. So one thing I would always tell myself is, I preached a lot to myself, but I would say, press into the pain, look up. So where am I going? What is my prize? And I always think about 1 Peter 1, where it talks about our inheritance is, it's never fading. It's undefiled. And so what's awaiting us is never changing. Even though our life here feels like we have no inheritance, but that God's kept that secure for us in heaven. And so I can trust in that And so if I'm pressing into my pain, but then I'm looking up, I'm not staying in the press in. I'm looking up, and then that helps me to press on.
Yeah, it's almost like a press through.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like,
you got to keep going.
You got to keep going. And I think, like, as someone who, you know, like I was saying, like, struggles with this kind of stuff, like, sometimes the just keep going is like, I'm trying to keep going. And hearing that as an encouragement rather than a command, I think is so important, because when you feel like people are just trying to, like, tell you what to do, you can, like, naturally buck up against that. But I think when people are, like, you are on the, not, you're not that you're on the other side of that pain, because I'm sure that you still experience it, but when you've walked through it and you're like, no, like, keep coming. Like, he's just as good in the middle. He's just, like, he's still good in the midst. Like, keep coming. That's just so encouraging.
Yes. And Elizabeth Elliot has a quote, which I'm sure you know, but it's do the next thing. So after she found out that Jim died, she went back to her hut and she said she started sweeping the floor. And that has been such an encouragement to me of, I want to show my kids coping skills, whether I feel it or not, but that mommy's always going to have breakfast. Some kind of breakfast. It could be cotton candy, but something. And mommy's going to get dressed, and mommy's going to get up and keep moving, even through the sadness. And I think God meets us there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I when I talk about depression, people a lot of the time are like, well, like, how do you mother and parent with depression? And my answer is usually, I make it from the bed to the couch.
Yeah.
And I feed them. And sometimes that's it. And that's enough.
Yes. And I think the security that they get just from seeing us take one step.
Exactly. Yeah. Do the next thing. And then even if the next thing is, like, microwaving some frozen pancakes and putting on Peter Pan and getting to the couch.
Right.
Your children are seeing that. And I think of, you know, if down the road one of your children experiences grief in some massive form or not, like, in just, like, a, like, normal everyday grief, like, they've watched their mom do it and not fake it, not everything's fine, like, sometimes they ate cotton candy for breakfast because you were grieving, and you, that was the next right thing for today, you know.
Right, like, we're sad but we're okay.
And it's like living in the tension of that. Yeah, that's incredible. And I'm so thankful that you're, because I know you're traveling and speaking and telling your story, right?
Yeah. So Brad, about 2 weeks before he died, he left me with the challenge to share our story. And I was a little bit angry with him because I'm like, wait a minute, public speaking is my worst fear. Just say, like, be a good mom or keep our children alive? But no, he left me with that challenge. And about 6 months ago, I started praying kind of a sassy prayer. Like, God, if you want me to do that, you're just going to have to make it happen. And the next week, I get a Facebook message of, do you speak?
Won't he do it?
I know. And so I had to get my stuff together.
You're like, I guess I do now. My husband totally sent you, didn't he?
She said, how much do you charge? I said, whatever you pay Beth Moore. Totally kidding.
That's an awesome response.
I know. So, but yes, God has brought so much healing from that. Man, when we have a place to share our hurt and to look at other people that are hurting and see that glimmer of hope in them, that if God can sustain me through the deepest, darkest, he can sustain you. And it's just passing that torch.
Okay, so we close out the interviews with rapid fire questions, and you're the first guest to get the new questions. So, like, no pressure. So we did keep, I did have to keep the first one the same. Do you know your Enneagram type?
I do. I am a 2 with a wing 3.
See, there's that public speaking. There's that 3. I could see that.
I love that. I don't think I knew my 3 until grief.
That is so interesting.
You came alive.
Right?
Wow. The 2 is very comfortable for me. It's just my natural bend. But that 3 came alive.
Wow. That's so interesting. What is your coffee order?
Okay, so in the morning, I'm all black.
Oh, look at you. See, that's such a 3 answer.
I know. And then in the afternoon, I sweeten things up.
I love that. My dad drinks black coffee, so, like, people that drink black coffee always have, like, a little spot in my heart. If you had one superpower, what would it be?
Okay, so she's not really a superhero, but I feel like I would love to be Mary Poppins.
Oh, she totally has a superpower. She has, like, all the superpowers, basically.
No, just that I could, like, whip my kids into shape and whip this house into shape.
Like, without having to get up and then, like, just have, like, this bottomless bag and, like, fly out of windows and jump into chalk drawings? Heck yes. Like, you totally knocked it out of the park. I don't know how anybody's going to ever follow this question up because, like, that's the best answer. Oh, my gosh. This was such an, like, incredible conversation. I'm so thankful for you taking the time and, like, trusting me to be your first podcast interview. Tell people where they can find and follow you.
Okay, so you can follow me on Instagram, and I'm Stacey W. Booth.
Perfect. And we will link to that in the show description so people can find you. Stacey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Blake. I have enjoyed it.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crappy Christian Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you super loved it, can you go leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening? That'd be awesome. All right, see you next week.